The application came back from the radio authority that we could do another RSL, but they asked me not to use the radio as a promotional tool for the nightclub. I told him that we would be doing many more outside broadcasts and that all the clubs in Derby could have their own DJs on the radio and that we would do a live broadcast from each of our competitors' venues. This time I could not afford to pay for the radio myself, so I decided to make it a commercial operation. We would carry advertising to pay for radio freedom. My friend Bob and his wife Misha were employed to get the advertising. Misha used to work in the sales department of the Derby Trader, so she knew what sales was about. Bob and Misha got major sponsorships from the most unlikely areas: the National Blood Service, Royal Air Force, Royal Marines, Derby City Council's New Normanton campaign, Royal Institute for the Blind, and many more. However, the new landlord, Reliance Electrical, hated us and would not advertise, nor would any of the local companies. Bob found a company who would make professional adverts and jingles for us. Things were looking up for once. I was still short of cash, but I did not care because the radio was going to be back on. This time I bought a good quality outside broadcast transmitter and went to Reading to hire a receiver to go with. Everyone who worked on Radio Freedom before wanted to come back. There were lots of new programs and ideas to try out this time. Bob was a fiery, strong-willed chap and he did not like Andy Palmer. I had arguments about format with him, but I did not let anyone deflect me from the task. I contacted a local poets' society and asked them if they would come in and read short poems about war and political strife. A succession of readers came in and we put them onto mini-discs. I told all the presenters that they must play at least one poem per show, but they must not comment in any way about them. They should be played after each advert break. I placed an advert in a radio mag for a newsreader. This time I wanted our own news program, which was to be called the Freedom News Report. It would be on each day at 5:30. Two people applied. One was Mark Stevens from Bristol and Curly Spencer, who lived in Derby but worked on Radio Caroline in the late 1980s. This next radio broadcast was to be bigger and better than the first two. We aimed to do at least one outside broadcast a day. We had been contracted to do a program from the assembly rooms for the National Blood Service. This would bring in £400 in one go. I recruited two professional presenters from Doncaster for this type of work. Radio Derby's Mark Sheldon and Mark Mason came back to work for me. The stage was set for one hell of a month. All the thoughts of the club closing had gone. Whilst the place was not rammed every night, it was ticking over. No radio station in Derby has ever undertaken the scale of outside broadcasting that we did during this month. There were about 30 programs sent via all the OB links. We sometimes did two or three in one day. Every event and every club got the chance to go on air. Here is a short list of a few of them: the National Blood Service from Assembly Rooms, several gigs from the Vic Inn, Progress Live from Time Nightclub, several bands from the Loft Club, the Tree Protest from Bass Rec, Pack Foods Normanton, the Rock Show from Sinfin, Asda Spondon, Manor Furnishings in Malova Forum Bookshop Abbey Street, live music from the Flower Pot Pub, and many more. Radio Freedom RSL3 sounded much more professional than RSL2. We had got more presenters who had been on air before. The most famous OB was the one we did from high up in the trees with the tree protesters. We took live phone calls from members of the public who wanted to save the park. All the equipment was hoisted high up into the tree houses whilst Matt Shell and Dexter Mixworth did the studio end of things. The council hated this and they tried to get us shut down, but they failed. Mark Stevens had his own newsroom in the old cellar. He was a master's degree in media and reported things in such detail, sometimes too much detail for our thicko listeners. He and Curly Spencer alternated each story whilst a dance beat played in the background. Once again we had our engineer Al Clemenson sorting things out at the studio end. We used a talkback system to link back to our two on-air studios A and B. One of the best OBs we did was from Time Nightclub on Mansfield Road. They had one of Derby's biggest dance nights. It was called Progress, and this was at the height of the dance music era. I arrived at the venue at lunchtime and put up the mast in the car park. The event was due to go out at 10 p.m. till midnight, but 9 o'clock we had the Traveling Without Moving radio show with Lee Whitehead and Marcus Shukla. They did not like Progress because they thought it was too safe and mainstream, but they were totally professional and gave Russell Davidson a big introduction. The week before, we sent out reporter Nick Smith to record interviews with punters. We got their customers to do shout-outs for their friends back home. These clips were overlaid onto the live feed, giving the impression that they were done live. This is a bit naughty, but it sounded really good. We did tell the interviewees that it would be going out the next week. Progress also had a radio show on Thursday evenings. It was called Big Beating Around the Bush. It featured a posse of Progress DJs who ran easy competitions, giving out free tickets to Big Beating Around the Bush at Union 1. It was really good to be in control of a vehicle that drove the culture of Derby. All the clubs were represented, and old names like Steve Rouse appeared and worked on the afternoon show. It was a bit like Radio Brannigan's on the Wednesday and Friday afternoons. They did an afternoon show playing soul and Motown. They went over the top promoting their club. Everyone told me to stop them from doing this, but I said let them get on with it because none of our punters go there anyway. Jason Molloy had a morning show. He got his dad to phone in every day to read the weather. It made good radio because his dad was a good laugh. I asked Jason if he would host a big outside broadcast from the spot outside the Eagle Shopping Center. I contacted the council and asked them if this was okay. I was amazed when they said yes. They said meet Bruce Cowles at the site on the Friday and he will show me where the main supply is and give me a key. Bruce Cowles is a Canadian sounding man but actually comes from New York. His name was to crop up later. He worked for the city center manager's office of Derby City Council. Bruce told me the only way of getting the mains power out to the square below was to throw an extension lead out of the clock tower. He gave me a key and told me to drop it off when I had finished. The Saturday was warm and sunny. We delivered a 3000 watt PA system to the spot. This was well over the top, and it was near the club, so we had no problems getting a signal back. Jason Molloy did a great job of entertaining the crowd of shoppers. You could hear the PA all the way back to the marketplace. We had people phoning in and did requests and competitions for the people sitting in the sun listening. Jason was a showman. He played at all the big clubs in the UK. His type of club was the Pink Coconut. On the Monday, there was a letter in the paper from an old bag from the Maltings at the back of my club complaining about the noise from the Spot Road show. We got a phone call from David Best, the city manager. I was rude to him on the phone because he accused us of being a pirate station. He was already fed up with the tree protest and decided to try to end our fun. I told him we had a license and he should piss off. I am sure he got the woman to write to the paper. Derby City Council did not like the fact that someone who was virtually unknown and not part of the establishment could appear on the scene and cause such a commotion. Normally it was the BBC that was supposed to shine a light on Derby's youth culture, yet they were failing to do this and we were showing them what was really happening in the town. For the rest of this RSL, we had to put up with the establishment sniping at us from all angles. My response was to fight back. We did more amazing outside broadcasts, one from Asda in Spondon. We set up just inside the entrance area. Jason Molloy once again delivered the goods and Asda made us most welcome and went along with the party. Manor Furnishings in Mick Lover provided us with sponsorship. All their staff and managers listened and were always ringing in. They said we could do a broadcast outside the store. It went down really well. We had lots of phone calls to our competitions. Jason Molloy played instant requests. If we did not have the tune, Al would download it and play it from the studio. The manager from the store came on air and thanked us for doing an excellent road show and offered our listeners big discounts at the store. When it came to the end of the RSL, we realized that we had captured the spirit of the first broadcast. I was sure the club had benefited by the exposure. Misha and Bob had done the impossible. They had pledges of about 5.000 in advertising, and I had made a deal to pay them a percentage of monies received in a basic flat rate. Problem: I forgot to write into the contract anything about credit control. When the broadcast was over, there was still about £1,500 still to be collected. I said I would pay the balance when the monies were received. Bob saw this departure from our original agreements. It kicked off big time. I had to pay up, even thought not all revenues had been collected. I paid up, but our working relationship was damaged. Karen said she would come in and try to get the slow-paying advertisers to cough up. Once the radio was off, this was difficult. It was costing me too much money to chase them. About 750 quid was never collected. However, we did get about 4,000 in advertising, and that went a long way to paying for RSL3. We had a farewell party on the Friday night in early May 1999. And as usual, I went off to my cottage in Branscombe for a well-earned holiday with Liz and Harvey.